How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to Brian and Ethan's Biathlon Podcast. After the holiday and New Year break, Biathlon is back in Germany, and we have a full podcast here to talk about it. All right, welcome back, everybody. We are now on Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast. So wherever is easiest to listen to our podcast, you can do it there. You can also leave us a one-minute voice message on our podcast website, so check the description down below. Ethan, Biathlon is back. We had a good time actually seeing each other over the Biathlon break at a Biathlon race in the United States. There's going to be a special episode coming out where Ethan and I do some Q&A for our YouTube fans who left us some questions. But Ethan, how was your holiday break?
It was good. It's always good to go home and see the family and kind of relax a little bit. I'm in school right now, so break in school is always nice and appreciated. How was your break?
It was good. I actually went to Soldier Hollow, Utah, and that's actually where we saw each other for some biathlon racing. And it was snowy in Soldier Hollow. It was cold in Soldier Hollow, but most importantly, there was a lot of really fast and good biathlon and Nordic racing in Soldier Hollow. So, all right, number one, no fans, kind of boring out there. I mean, coming off of Annecy-le-Grand-Bernard, going from just an absolute madhouse in France to nothing in Germany, in Oberhof, where typically the fans are some of the most rowdy fans of the season. Biathlon felt a little boring, you know, like it just goes to show you just how the energy and the excitement from the fans, even watching it online or on TV, really gets portrayed, you know, during the race and during all the action.
Yeah. I mean, in France, you could feel the added excitement from the fans when, you know, like in the mass start, when Jacques Alain was destroying everybody, the fans made it feel that much more awesome. And in Oberhof, we didn't really get that. And I think even with those conditions that they had, where it was kind of snowy, foggy, and not super duper great, ideal conditions for racing, you kind of feel for the athletes a little bit, and it must have been pretty tough out there.
Yeah, and it's too bad too, because the Germans actually had a pretty good weekend. I mean, they had two people in the men's sprint flower ceremony. They had at least one person in the top 15 for the women. And then, you know, their mixed relay team was kind of, you know, in the hunt the whole time, ended up coming in sixth. The single mixed relay team, they were, you know, not as good, but still in the hunt, seventh place. So, I mean, it was kind of too bad, because the Germans, I think, really stepped it up for their, you know, their home course, but there was just no one there to really push them and cheer them on around the tracks. All right, so we're going to move on to our second shot here. Speaking of a little bit disappointing in Germany, I'm going to cross-promote here and promote one of the other videos that I put out recently. Did you see the range official blunder from the World Team Challenge in Ruhpolding?
I did, yeah.
So for those of you who aren't up to date, I'll leave a link to that video down below. But basically, there was the World Team Challenge is this sort of TV exhibition event that it's not associated with the IBU, but I think it's just purely like a money and sponsor and expo event that they just get some of the biggest names from around the biathlon world to get together and compete in a modified event. It's a short course, really fast, lots of shooting, you know, typically like some sort of relay with your teammate. And during the event, while athletes were shooting, a range official jumped over the firing line to retrieve a dropped magazine. And it just is crazy to see this guy come running in out of nowhere, runs into the picture, and then just jumps into the range while people are shooting. I don't know. I mean, I covered it in my other video, so go check that out if you're interested in seeing it. But I don't know. It just kind of begs the question, like, What's the craziest or, you know, unsafe thing that you've seen at a biathlon range?
I mean, like, up until that, it was just someone maybe like reaching over the firing line to drop, to pick up like a magazine or a spare round or their sunglasses or something. But I don't think I've ever seen anyone totally jump right over the line. Cause it's not like he like, cause well, one of the athletes dropped her magazine over the line, and it's not like he was trying to go pick it up and like slipped and fell. He just went straight over and jumped over.
He just like swan dove over the firing line.
Yeah. Like, he didn't even hesitate to think about it at all.
Yeah, I gotta say, the craziest thing I've probably seen is actually something really similar. Our biathlon range where I coach, there's a ski trail next to it that we have to close down when we're shooting. And one time we just had a parent of a junior racer just decide that they wanted to go down that ski trail, even though the trail was closed. And there was fencing, there were signs, there was everything up to indicate that the trail was closed and it wasn't safe. But they just came, kind of like this volunteer, just came right up to a shooting point, ran across the mat, and just started skiing down the trail. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, it's crazy. You know, it just reminds everyone that everyone's responsible for safety around a biathlon range. And, you know, that includes staying behind the rifles as they're being shot.
Yeah. And if any of you guys like do biathlon or haven't tried it and you're about to go and try it, I guarantee you the first thing they're going to say to you is don't cross the firing line. And that's like the fundamental safety piece of biathlon is don't cross the firing line.
All right, let's move on to something we're happy to talk about. Marta Olsbu Roysland. We really haven't talked too much about her this year. There's been a lot of communication. We've talked a lot about other athletes, you know, having really good starts to the season. But Marta Roysland has sort of been sneaking around in the background. And then all of a sudden, at least to me, like out of nowhere, she's just exploded to the front of the field. And she is looking super dominant.
And if you go to realbiathlon.com and look at their graphs for the overall standings, Roysland's just been taking off the past few weeks. And I think we haven't talked about her just because she hasn't done anything crazy. Like, she hasn't blown us away with her ski speed. She's just been hitting her targets, skiing fast, but not crazy fast. And if you hit your targets and you're skiing pretty fast, and you're probably going to do pretty well. And I think that's just exactly what she's been doing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just kind of looking at her last couple of races right now. She has been on the podium, or I'm sorry, she's been in the top five or the flower ceremony pretty much every single race except for the sprint in Östersund and the very first race of the season in Östersund. Which kind of surprises me because, yeah, I look at this graph, this progression chart on Real Biathlon, and she's really only had the yellow bib since World Cup 4 Pursuit. So that would have been the Anasé Pursuit. So she hasn't had the yellow bib really at all until, like, these last couple races. But if you just look at her line and her trajectory, since not really, like, having a good start to the season, the first three races weren't super impressive. Since then, she's just been like going crazy, climbing through the ranks, and now she's even made some separation on Elvira Oyberg.
I don't know if she'll have as many wins as Tyrell Eckhoff did last year, because that's kind of what carried Eckhoff through her season, because she didn't start out super great, and if she didn't have a super great race, it was probably outside the top 10, top 15. But it seems like Roysland, her bad days are when she finishes 12th, 10th, or 6th, 4th. Like, her bad days really aren't that bad. And her ski speed consistently, for the most part, in the top 10. If she has a bad day, it's still pretty good. And I think she'll be more consistent than Eckhoff was. And I don't know if she'll have as many wins, but I think she could definitely get more points than Eckhoff did last year.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. I went back to check. So this year, Marta Olsbu-Roysland's shooting percentage total is 91%, and it's pretty much the exact same for standing and prone, like 90 and 92 for standing. So she's very consistent shooting, 91%. Last year, Eckhoff's record-breaking season, she shot 84%. So she's already she's 6% higher. That's the equivalent of like a shot per race, which for Eckhoff last year was like, it seemed like she couldn't miss.
Yeah.
And then the thing is her ski speed, Roysland's ski speed this year against the top 30, she's skiing 1.2% faster than the top 30. And last year, Eckhoff was skiing 2.2. So Eckhoff did have a 1% advantage on ski speed last year. However, that 6% in the shooting percentage, I think, almost makes up for that because, like, yeah, adding 30 seconds or taking away 30 seconds of penalties, or I guess like the World Cup standard is like 25 seconds or something, but taking that time away in penalties can make up for a, you know, 1% difference on the course. So it's actually, yeah, really interesting to see that it's kind of shaping up to be, pretty similar, except just with a little bit different stats. And, you know, for us biathlon fans who follow the sport super closely, it's actually even going to be like a little bit of a case study to see, like, what if Tyrlekov was able to take 1% off of her ski speed, but hit the target more, you know, would she still be as successful? Yeah. You know, what carries more weight, ski speed or shooting percentage, you know, at a high level. Mm-hmm. So I really hope she can keep this up and we can actually get a good, you know, value at the end of the season to be like, wow, you know, goes to show you that there's more than one way to win a race.
Yeah.
Yeah, Roysland will be in Roop holding, but, you know, and actually Tyrell Eckhoff is going to come back. Tyrell decided to sit out this week in Oberhof, and she did leave early from Anasse. And then, you know, we have for the women, Noten, who's been on the World Cup, and then the rest are all really IBU Cup girls who are coming up for more experience. The Norwegian men, they're not sending anyone to Roop holding, except for like Johannes Dahle. But at this point, he's an IBU Cup guy. And then, you know, Botengard as well. He's kind of on and off. Same with Andersen. We also saw some athletes take off time this week. Like, I think Lukas Hofer took off some time this week. I saw some people not start the pursuit race after racing the sprint. So it looks like we're starting to get into that time of year where athletes are going to be taking time off and prepping for the Olympics. And we were wondering how much of this was going to happen. You know, I'm just curious, like, you know, is this necessary? Is it really necessary to take time off? Because there is going to be a little break after the World Cup, after the Anholt World Cup, before the Olympics. So is it really necessary to take time off from the World Cup?
I don't know. I mean, it seems like teams and athletes do this every year for whether it's world champs or the Olympics, and it's never really easy to tell if it pays off. But I think for the Norwegian men to not send any of the regulars to the World Cup, I think if they're planning to do a World Cup, a training camp together somewhere at altitude, I kind of understand that because a time trial or a simulation race between those four or five guys is kind of like competing for the podium on the World Cup anyway. It's like for them, it's super competitive still, but I really don't know.
The first race in China for the Olympics is on February 5th. And the final race in Anholt's is January 23rd. And as of today's recording, it's January 10th. So, I mean, in terms of like athletic training, we are about 3 weeks out. And in terms of athletic training, like 3 weeks or 21 days is like that golden you know, that golden number of, you know, time it takes your body to really adapt to training. So we are in that final period. For those of you who know the lingo, we're in that final period and build up to Beijing. It's actually interesting. Yeah. Before the Olympics in Pyeongchang, Oleander Bjørndalen had a really famous quote, or maybe it was Sochi. Yeah, actually, I think it was before Sochi. Sorry. The whole team decided to, you know, basically not go to the World Cup and go to altitude and train. And Bjørndalen was like, no, I'm just going to go to the World Cup. I don't care. So he went to the World Cup and he raced. He did fine. And the reporters were like, hey, you know, why didn't you go with your team? And his answer was basically like, I've put all the time in. I've trained. I've done the hard work. Like, nothing I'm going to do. There's nothing I'm going to do now in the last couple of weeks that's going to drastically change my chances for a medal. And they were like, okay. And then he shows up to Sochi and ends up winning a gold medal. So it's like, you know, maybe there's something there that people are starting to maybe get a little nervous, and they're like, oh, I got only 3 weeks left of, you know, controlling my training plan. I got to freak out about the Olympics. But, you know, maybe Bjørndalen was like, hey, whatever happens, happens. You know, we did the work already. Whatever happens, happens. And he was more relaxed. And that's maybe what maybe won him that medal. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Russians. We get a lot of people in the comments on our videos asking why we don't talk about the Russians. And without diving too deep into the politics or my personal opinions, I've been pretty outspoken about, you know, Loganov's participation. And whenever he does well, it really, I don't know, it just doesn't sit well with me. But we do have to acknowledge that the Russians had a pretty good weekend this week. And yeah. I mean, Loganov won the sprint, and then he was pretty dominant in the pursuit until he just completely messed up in his final standing and had three misses. But they had the flower ceremony in the mixed relay. They won the single mixed relay. And yeah, they just had a really good weekend. It's hard to say anything more about it. They just were really solid. So, you know, what's your takeaway on this? Are they benefiting because others are tapering, or do you think they're, you know, sort of on the rise?
I think it might be a little bit of both. I think a lot of teams probably put in a lot of work over the Christmas and holiday break period, and then they're kind of feeling it a little bit right now. Like, there are definitely some athletes out there, like Jacqueline and there's a few more, but I can't think of their names, or Ponsaluma, but they didn't quite look like their usual selves on the skis. And I wonder if that's kind of a after effect of them putting in some more training than others. But I think the Russians, like the women, the last weeks in Le Grand Bonnat and the week before that, we're kind of trending upwards. I think we're all just waiting for Loganov to start having top 10, top 5 results consistently. And I think the Russians were going to kind of pop off at some point in the season. Just a matter of time when. I think now that athletes might be a little tired or kind of taking their foot off the gas a little bit, it might have been easier to show this weekend.
Yeah, one person who we've talked about a little bit this year, but she's been in the mix, like almost every race, kind of out of nowhere, is Kristina Retsova. You know, she's 25 years old. She had a full season on the World Cup last year. Her average race rank was like 40th place. Her personal best was 18th in a pursuit race. Nothing really much to write home about. And then all of a sudden she starts off this season in the first race, 8th place, and then she kind of drops back down to her 30s. But then over the last couple of weeks, she's been moving back up to the point where over the last, like, really 5 or 6 races, she's been in the top 10, like, consistently. Mm-hmm. And her shooting is much better than last year. Her skiing is much better than last year. And both skiing and shooting are much better than they were when she was on the IBU Cup. So that's one to watch, I think, for the Olympics, because I mean, how often do we see someone sort of lurking in the shadows, and you know, the casual biathlon fan might not see them coming, and then all of a sudden they just get that one day where like everyone just has one miss and you're clean, or that one day where, you know, you set yourself up well in the pursuit and that one person you're battling for the podium or for the win even misses their last target and you're able to pull away. Like, I think, you know, to the casual biathlon fan, Kristina Rytsova is not a household name yet, but she's just caught my eye as someone who's been sort of lurking in the shadows there in the top 10. And yeah, I think, you know, if everything goes right, because I mean, there is like that thing in biathlon where it's like, you know, like, I completely lost my train of thought, but there's that thing in biathlon where you kind of need a little bit of luck to go along with your skill. And who knows? What if that day that she gets a little bit of luck is at the Olympics and she ends up winning an Olympic gold medal? Definitely think she's one to watch.
Going back to your point, where like, how often does it feel like someone who's kind of had good results but not any amazing results, kind of like lurking in the shadows, like you said, has a great race at the Olympics because others don't that are usually ahead of them? I kind of feel like every race in the Olympics in 2018 was like that.
Yeah.
Where like Krismar got a medal, Arne Pfeiffer got a medal, Samuelsson got a medal. It seems like that was every race.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. So yeah, I think, you know, she, as we get close to the Olympics, she's the one to watch. She's also, you know, young, 25. Everyone else, I guess the Belarusians are pretty young, but and Elvira Oyberg is younger, but everyone else ahead of her is like, you know, I would say more established. Roslyn, Ellen Bekova, Hanna Oyberg, Lisa Teresa Hauser, Anaya Chevalier. So yeah, you know, I think she's in that position of like, hey, I'm just gonna strike, you know, I got nothing to lose, sort of like, yeah, Samuelsson in the last Olympics. On the men's side, I mean, Loganov definitely is on the rise now. Two good races in Oberhof. But then like Edward Latyapov, he's been shooting pretty well this year. He's been a guy who's been on the Russian team for a while, and like he doesn't have any World Cup wins yet. And he's got a couple second places, but no World Cup wins yet. And, you know, he's another guy that, you know, he's shooting well. You could put him as a favorite for the individual even. You know, he likes the longer races. Some of his best results are in the individual. Yeah, maybe he's the guy who strikes at the Olympics out of nowhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you right now had to choose someone that – isn't really contending for podiums, race in and race out to get a medal at the Olympics, who would you choose, man and woman?
Man and woman. Honestly, I think best bet for men, Johannes Kuhn.
Yeah.
Because he's a really fast skier. And again, I think his shooting percentages are letting him down a little bit. He's 30 years old, which means he has experience. And especially to start this season, at kind of like halfway through last season and to start this season, his shooting percentages were way down from what he's normally doing. And then suddenly in like the last couple races, his shooting percentage has skyrocketed way up. So I don't know what he did over the weekend or over the break, but he all of a sudden remembered how to shoot. And when that happened, when his shooting percentage shot way up, he had really good races in Oberhof this year or this week. Fourth place in the sprint, dropped to 22 in the pursuit. But I mean, he had pretty bad shooting in the pursuit. So if he can maintain his really fast skiing, because he's put up some like really good top 10 ski times consistently through his career, but you just don't think of him as a podium guy. You know, you think of him as more like 15-35 in the results. So I think, yeah, if he can shoot well in the race and continue his top 10, I think he could be a big surprise podium guy, which I know the Germans would love.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, for the women, I don't know. I do think it's Rizova who's going to be my favorite. Everyone else I'm looking at in the, you know, at least the top 25 on the World Cup standings is a little bit of, like, I don't want to say a favorite. I mean, there's obviously a lot of favorites, but then everyone else, I'm kind of like, oh, that's a big name. I wouldn't be surprised if they get a medal. That's a big name.
Yeah.
Would not be surprised. But there are a few in here. Honestly, the one who I'd love to see the most is Lotte Ly, the woman from Belgium. Yeah. She's currently ranked 20th overall. It would be awesome if out of nowhere, a woman from Belgium gets a gold medal at the Olympics, because I don't know. I just think that would be super exciting. I love when the small nations do well.
Yeah. I think, go ahead.
Let's real quick, just looking at Lai's stats. She's 26 years old, so she's pretty young. Only has really two seasons of World Cup biathlon. Her best races all come in individual, in sprint, pursuit, mass start. I guess she's pretty well-rounded. Her best results are definitely from this season. Better shooter than she is skier. So, yeah, I mean, maybe if she gets, you know, good skis during the individual, no reason why she can't, you know, maybe be on the podium in the individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think if I had to choose, I was also going to choose Johannes Kuhn, but I feel like I can't choose him because you chose him.
That's how it works.
Yeah. Maybe I probably Ponsaluma, if he, you know, he's a sprint world champion from last year. If he can hit all 10 of his targets and ski as fast as he does in the sprint again, and everybody else has one or two misses, the rest of the top guys, one or two misses, I don't see why he couldn't repeat his sprint kind of world champion success, but at the Olympics, and hopefully get a medal. I think that's totally possible. And then for the women, I'd probably say maybe Tandrevold. She looked really good in the mixed relay. I think she's been having great races lately. And let's see, she's not racing the RuPauling World Cup, is she?
She's not.
No, she won't. So maybe
if she's any indication of the Norwegian training plan, then I have full faith in the Norwegians to do well at Beijing, because it seemed like the whole Norwegian team, men included, sort of coasted into the beginning of the season and just over time have started moving their way up the field. I think this week we saw that with Roysland obviously dominating, but Kandervold as well. Like, she definitely did way better this weekend than she has the entire rest of the season. So I think the Norwegians are trying to time the Olympics pretty well. And I think Tandervold's the latest example of Olympics are getting closer. They're starting to step the game up.
Yeah. I was talking with my brother about this earlier, and we were talking, like, are the Norwegians, like, having a tough year in terms of relative success the past few years? Or are they really, really peaking for the Olympics? And I think they're just going to peak for the Olympics and absolutely destroy, hopefully.
All right, spare round. Performance of the weekend. What do you think? What happened this weekend that just stood out amongst the rest?
I kind of talked about it earlier. As much as it pains me to say it, I'm probably going to have to say logging off in the sprint, because he really wasn't having a great season up until that race. And like, I saw the results, and that, you know, really surprised me seeing his name at the top. And in the pursuit, he did everything right except for that last shooting. And I totally thought he was going to lose it on the, you know, even before the first shooting when Jacques Allan started only 7 seconds behind him, but he stretched that lead out and he looked really good, as much as I might not want to say it, but he did look good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to go with actually Florent Cloud from Belgium. He had his second best result ever in the sprint at 11th place, shooting 90%. And he was able to back that up with a personal best 9th place in the pursuit, moving up 2 places, again shooting 90%, and posting 2 pretty respectable ski times. So, yeah, I think it's, again, anytime, for me, anytime someone from one of those smaller nations does well, it's really inspiring for me. And also Florent's story of why he's racing for Belgium, probably a story for another video, but really inspirational. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just good to see him doing well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was pretty awesome watching him in the pursuit. Kind of usually he kind of moves up and then maybe loses a few spots towards the end, but he stayed right there, and that was pretty awesome to watch.
Yeah. Also, is it just me, or does that dude have the biggest shoulders on the circuit?
I was going to say he's probably the buffest dude out there.
Now that Arne Pfeiffer's retired, especially.
Yeah, true. He was his only contender before.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Yeah, leave a comment down below if you want to join the conversation. We try to read all the comments and take your feedback pretty seriously. But yeah, again, like I said, you can listen to us on Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, whatever is easiest for you. So if you're driving in the car or working on something, listen to us in the background. And yeah, feel free to go leave us a 1-minute voice message on the podcast website. Link in the description below. We'll see you.